Galatians chapter 4, if you'll go ahead and find your place in Galatians chapter 4. And Brother Edwards is going to come now. He's got a quick announcement for our Silvertones. You can be finding your place in Galatians chapter 4, and then we'll get started, okay?
All right, Silvertones, this is to see if you're flexible. We have an opportunity to go on a Silvertones outing this coming Saturday. If you are available, we'll meet here at the church at 4 o'clock. We're going to go to Christiansburg and eat at the Golden Corral in Christiansburg. And then in Blacksburg, there is a living nativity outside. It is supposed to be excellent. There is a big walk around. You get out, you walk around. A lot of very good things have been done with it. It's at Gateway Baptist Church there in Blacksburg. And I've done research online. Mrs. Chrisley put me in line of this. And it looks like it would be a great opportunity. Something different, a living nativity. We'll leave here at 4 o'clock on Saturday and go to dinner. And as soon as we're done with dinner, we'll go over to Blacksburg, and we should be able to be back here by about 9 o'clock. All right? There is not a sign-up sheet out there. I'll try to have one up tonight, so I'll have an idea of how many are going. But if you're interested in going, let me know. Just kind of catch me after church and say, I want to go on the thing to the Living Nativity and to a dinner at Golden Corral. Again, it's this coming Saturday. We'll leave here at 4 o'clock and be back by about 9 o'clock.
Okay. While you're finding your place in Galatians chapter 4, I want to take just a moment and brag on the Lord. Now, I could do that and spend the rest of the day into tomorrow doing it and not even scratch the surface of what the Lord's done. But envelope was put on my desk last week, and it reflected the wishes of the leadership regarding my Christmas bonus and that of the rest of the staff. On behalf of all of us, we say thank you. It was more than generous, and we're so very grateful. But I'm going to be. I'll tell you a secret. The last couple of years, what usually happens with our bonus, it goes straight into savings, because my wife knows that if it doesn't go straight into savings, then I'll spend it all on gum. And so it went straight into savings, as is normally what we do. But the last couple of years, it seems that as soon as the Christmas bonus gets here, something happens to evaporate said Christmas bonus. Now, there's one of two ways you can view this. You can take the spiritual route that my wife does and says, well, the Lord knew this need was coming, and he made sure that what was needed to cover it was here. Spiritual. Or you can take the less than spiritual route that I unfortunately take and say, there goes my bonus. This year, if I'm lying, I'm dying, y'all. Bonus check in hand. The next day, we set our temperature to 65, and we like it cold in the house. And we set it at 65, and then we got up the next morning, and it was a nip in the air. It's 56. First thing I thought is, all right, Crystal, we're going a little too far trying to save money. Okay, 56 is a bit low. But the heat pump, if you've been to our home, you know it. We got a little bit of square footage, and so we've got one for each floor. And the heat pump that operates the upstairs was not working correctly. How many of you know that whenever a heat pump is involved, it's never cheap? Never cheap. So I called our friends that we use personally. We also use them here, by the way. And this isn't meant to be a commercial for them. But anyway, I called them up and said, is there any way you can get over? I'm about to go out of town for a couple of days. Is there any way you can get over here and look at it? And they worked us in. And the guy came down. Name is Tim. And he's just kind of, I could tell, look on his face, it wasn't good. And Tim said, well, you got a refrigerant leak. And my first thought was, well, I'm not looking to refrigerate the place. I'm looking to heat it. But apparently a refrigerant leak affects the operation of your heat pump, and thus it doesn't heat. You know, I'm thinking, great, I don't need refrigeration anyway. That's what we got right now. And he said, so I'm going to have to solder the joint back, and I know where the leak is. I'm going to have to solder the joint back, and I'm going to have to put more refrigerant in. Refrigerant's expensive, by the way. Miss Spiritual over here. Well, the Lord knew. I wasn't feeling spiritual.
There's my bonus again.
But at least we had the presence of mind to stop and say, all right, Lord, you knew this was happening, and we just pray that you'd take care of it, then it wouldn't be the worst case scenario. Well, Tim walked back in. He said, I got good news for you. I said, good news. Oh, wonderful. Let me hear this good news. He said, the joint that was leaking, we're the ones that did it. And we did it last December. You're just barely still under warranty. You don't owe us a thing. I said, what about the refrigerant? He said, I called. They said, go ahead and charge it up. No cost. Isn't that good? Now, of course, I could go home today and it'd be 20 degrees in that house. But for right now, I feel compelled to brag on the Lord because he took care of a need. He's a good God, isn't he? He's a good God. Galatians chapter 4. I'm going to be transparent with you this morning. I tend to do that from time to time, and I'm going to do it again today. Because I find that in many cases, it helps people to know that they're not the only ones thinking and feeling like they do. In my interactions with God and my prayer life and so forth, I find that more often than not, it is not that God does not give me what I ask for. Because if you know anything about me, about my life, what could I possibly want? I have a beautiful wife, a beautiful daughter, a wonderful church. We got a beautiful home and food on our table and clothes on our back. What really could I want? And so from that perspective, it's not really so much that God doesn't give me what I ask for, that I'm dissatisfied with his answers to my prayer. Here's the greater struggle for me. It's that God does not always answer my prayer when I think he should. Sometimes his timing does not match up with my timing. And I want him to do something, and I want him to do it right now. And that's just not how God works. Sometimes it's not so much that we're dissatisfied with what God is doing. It's that we struggle with when he does it. And we feel like he needs to operate on our timetable. And we forget the wonderful truth that not only does God not operate on our timetable, God transcends time. God is ever in the present. He was and is to come. He is the great I am. And sometimes I think that I could really, really live a victorious life if I could just learn this lesson that God does what he does. It's always right, and it is always, always right on time. You know? I want to read to you Galatians chapter 4, beginning in verse number 1. Now I say that the heir, as long as he is a child, differeth nothing from a servant, though he be lord of all, but is under tutors and governors until the time appointed of the father. Even so, we, when we were children, were in bondage under the elements of the world. Now we're going to come back to verse 4, but you know where I'm going to focus. But when the fullness of the time was come, God sent forth his son, made of a woman, made under the law, to redeem them that were under the law, that we might receive the adoption of sons. And because ye are sons, God hath sent forth the Spirit of his Son into your hearts, crying, Abba, Father. By the way, that word Abba has the same feel and the same meaning in its use here that we would say for daddy. It is a very intimate, a very acquainted form of father. Wherefore, thou art no more a servant, but a son. And if a son, then an heir of God through Christ. Let me give you a couple of things introductory-wise to get us started. The general overarching theme of the book of Galatians is that grace is far better than law. What was happening with the Galatians, and these Galatians were Gentiles that had been saved, and Judaizers, those people who would incorporate the law into the wonders that is grace, were telling them, oh, that's fine if you want to believe in Jesus, that's fine if you want to make a profession, that's fine if you want to be baptized by immersion, but understand you also need to keep the feast, and you need to keep the rites and the rituals and all of that. And what they were doing is they were incorporating works and law into grace. And in doing so, not only were they making grace of no effect, because grace with any measure of work stops being grace. And for by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourselves, it's the gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. You cannot put any mixture of works into grace. You're saved by grace through faith alone. But not only did it do that, those who were already saved, it was wooing them back into a legalistic system, and it stunted their growth. And they weren't able to become the Christians that they were meant to be. Grace is better than law. God designed it that way. And Paul uses the analogy of a child, particularly a male child, born into a family. Let's say a family of nobility, a family of some means, a family of power, a family of ability, a family of wealth, a family of influence. But you know what? As long as that kid was the position that he was as just a child of that father, he had no more inherent rights than the slave that was given tutorage over him. The slave, the servant, answered to the master, and the child answered to the servant. By the way, if you have a translation, now we use the King James here. I won't get in a fight over anybody over it, but I'm a King James guy. And whatever translation mistakenly changes sons to children, thinking that that's the right thing to do, it's not. Because in this culture in which Galatians was written, it makes a difference. A child just meant that you were physically related to this person, but sonship was something far better. Sonship was that point in that young person's life that the father endued that boy with the position, legally speaking, of as a son. And he had all the rights and all the privileges and all the inheritance possibilities of being a son. So what it's saying, whenever the Bible talks about to as many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God. Not only are you born into the family of God and become a child of God, you also get adopted into the family of God, and you get all the rights and privileges and benefits thereof. You're not just going to heaven, you get everything on the way. I'm not the son of God, y'all, but I am a son of God. And I have a right to the grace and the peace and the love and the joy and the meekness and the temperance and the long-suffering and all the good things that come with being saved. And if you don't understand that, then friend, you're living beneath your privilege. God has so much more for you than what you're enjoying right now. Grace is better than law. So he uses that analogy. And I've not even begun to scratch the surface of this. But let me tell you what I love. Verse 4. But when the fullness of the time was come, God sent forth His Son. And as we approach Christmas and we think of the birth of Christ, this is an appropriate verse. When the fullness of the time was come, God sent forth His Son. The fullness of the time. Do you know what that phrase means? It means when the conditions were absolutely perfect. God was not early. God was not late. God was, as He always is, perfect. Jesus Christ was born at the exact perfect moment for humanity to most benefit from Him. Before this, up until Zacharias, God hadn't spoken to his people for 400 years. And then the angel of the Lord speaks to Zacharias and tells him they're going to have a son, John the Baptist. Boy, the floodgates open from there. Had God sent Jesus 400 years before and Malachi would have seen him, he'd have been too early. If God would have waited 400 years later, he'd have been too late. Jesus could not be born in Moses' day. By the way, there seems to be some evidence that Eve thought Jesus would come in her day. Perhaps Abraham looked for him in his day. And Moses looked for him in his day. And David looked for him in his day. And Isaiah looked for him in his day. But God knew when the fullness of the time. Now. And so God did what he promised he would do, but he also did it at the most precise, exact, perfect, most beneficial moment. So that's what I want to talk to you about for a few minutes this morning. The perfect timing of God. The perfect timing of God. Father, would you help me today? I need your help. I am so guilty of not always being sensitive to your view of time. And I'm impatient. And my impatience generates a bad attitude, and I'm just not all that I should be. And I confess that. And ask you to forgive me and use me in spite of myself. Lord, I suspect there are people in this room this morning, they're hurting for different reasons. Different things are going on in their lives, and they need some guidance and some help. I pray you provide it. God, I pray that you'd be with those that need encouragement, those that need conviction, those that need something, Lord. Help them. If there's somebody in our midst that's lost, I pray they trust Christ before it's too late. May they see how desperately they need the grace of God. And may Christ be lifted up. For it's in his name we ask these things. Amen. The fullness of the time. I'm going to ask two questions. Here's the two questions. You ready? Number one, why? And number two, so what? Why is this so important? And what does this mean to us today? Okay, here's the why. Why was this the fullness of the time? Why was this the perfect moment? Well, first of all, it was perfect in regard to the message. When Jesus came to this earth and was the gospel personified, it needed to be at a time when that message could be disseminated quickly. I'd have you know that right now, at this time, language was never more fluid than it was right now. It was never more pervasive than it was at this moment. It was never more worldwide than it was. Nearly everybody spoke the same language, or at least had a working understanding of what we call Koine or Common Greek. And so God sent Jesus at a moment when the message of the gospel could be disseminated over all the world. But then number two, it was best regarding its management. Now, none of us would say that the Romans were kind people. They were quite brutal. But the Romans did bring a certain order and a certain system to the world that God would use to benefit those who needed the gospel. The Romans had roads everywhere. The Romans had systems of law and order everywhere. In fact, beginning under Caesar Augustus, there was what was called the Pax Romana, a relative system of peace compared to past situations. And so there was never a better time for this to happen because of the management of things. But there was a third reason. The fullness of time was perfect because of a message and because of the management, but thirdly, because of a marriage. You see, it was at this time that two specific people were on this earth. You ready? A man named Joseph lived, and a lady named Mary lived. And it is my personal belief that there are no other two people that could have done what Mary and Joseph did. That God worked in their respective families to bring them to that fullness of time. Let me give you one reason why this is so important. You have Joseph, a good man. Evidently, he died before Jesus began his earthly ministry, because there's no mention of him going forward. A little bit of Mary, but none of him. Joseph was a good man, an honorable man, a decent man. I have a whole message just on Joseph. Perhaps we'll cover that sometime in this Christmas season. But Joseph had something interesting about him. If you look at Matthew chapter 1, the genealogies that we all just love, such and such begat such and such, don't you just skip over those. They're important. You find out that Joseph was a direct descendant of David. Joseph was in line for the throne. But there was a problem. You have David, and then his son Solomon, and then down the line a bit, you've got this guy named Coniah, also called Jeconiah or Jeconias, same guy. And in Jeremiah chapter 22, God says something to Coniah. He says, "None of your seed will prosper on the throne of David." Well, Joseph was one of his seed. Well, if God says it, that's how it is. Well, God flew off the handle. Now he's ruined this whole thing because Joseph is one of the seed and Joseph can't prosper on the throne of Israel. Oh, but then you've got a little girl, probably a teenager, named Mary. And here's the thing. If you go to Luke 3, another one of those genealogies, you know what you find out about Mary? Mary is a direct descendant of David too. But she's not David, Solomon, Jeconiah. No. It's David, his son Nathan, to Mary. So what does this mean? Mary had a son, her firstborn. They called him Jesus. And this Jesus had the physical right to rule from the throne of David as the king of the Jews, because Mary was a direct descendant of David. He had that physical right. But here's the problem. Joseph, being a descendant of Coniah, couldn't be the king. But Jesus wasn't Joseph's seed, was he? You remember we talked about adoption earlier? Joseph adopted Jesus, gave him all the legal rights as his son. But Jesus was not one of his seed. His father was and is God. So what you have in Jesus is the only man to ever walk this planet who is both physically and legally qualified to rule from David's throne. How is this possible? It's a little thing called the virgin birth. And without the virgin birth, Jesus can't be who he says he is. He can't reign as he should, and he can't save any of us from our sin. But I'm glad to tell you that when God called that curse down on Coniah, he knew exactly how this thing was going to work out, because he knew in the fullness of time there'd be a marriage between Joseph and Mary, and that it would be perfect. Don't you tell me my God's not involved in the details. He knows what he's doing. You see, this is the fullness of time. It's perfect because of the marriage, and it's perfect because of the management. It's perfect because of the message, and then finally, it's perfect because of the mindset. People for years and years and years have been crying out for a deliverer. The Jews were sick of Roman rule. The Jews were ripe and ready. And all of the other philosophies and religions were showing themselves to be false and empty and vain. Aristotle wasn't cutting it. Plato wasn't cutting it. Socrates wasn't cutting it. And all this other stuff out of Babylon wasn't cutting it. We need something real. By the way, I think America's there right now. They need something real. They need something authentic. And hey, folks, we've got it. The mindset was where it needed to be. People were ready. The world was yearning. So we see that this was the perfect timing, the fullness of the time because of a message, because of the management, because of a marriage, because of the mindset. You say, all right, Andy, so what? What am I supposed to take from this today? Here it is. You ready? Don't raise your hand, but I think there's many of us in here, and we've been begging God for something. And it hasn't happened yet. And we don't understand. Lord, what I'm asking for is not wrong. What I'm asking for, I believe, would please you. And yet, you keep waiting. And you keep waiting. I'd imagine there were some people there in Judea that had prayed for a long time that God would send his Messiah. And he didn't. And they died, and their kids prayed for it, and he didn't. And they died. Well, when they got to heaven, you know what they found out? God heard the prayer, but it was not yet the fullness of time. See, as you're praying for this situation, presuming that you're praying biblically, scripturally, that you're praying in God's will, God's listening, and here's what he's doing. He's waiting for the fullness of time. You see, if God answers your prayer too early, no good. If he answers your prayer too late, no good. But God has a way of answering prayer, whether you feel so or not, right on time. In the fullness of time, God sent forth his Son. Hey, beloved, in the fullness of time, God will send forth your answer. But you got to wait. It may be a matter of the message. Maybe God knows that if he answers your prayer right now, then it'll help you. But if he answers your prayer here, five people will get saved. The message will be more effective if he waits. It's like Lazarus. Had Jesus come when Mary and Martha asked him to and healed Lazarus, that'd have been great. But how much more effective was it that he let Lazarus be dead 4 days and then answered it? Do you think more people were affected by Lazarus raising from the dead, being dead 4 days, than would have been had he just healed him sick? I think so. And so the message would have had more opportunity to be disseminated. Or maybe he knows that the management's not yet there. Could it be that God hasn't answered your prayer because he knows you can't handle it yet? Can I give you a perfect example? I had a dear member of my last church. He's in heaven now. Come to me after a service one day, and he goes, "Preacher, I just want you to know something." Real gruff fella. "I just want you to know something." "What's that?" "I just say this because I love you and I want to help you." "Okay." "You realize statistically you're probably never going to get married." "Well, bless your heart, brother. What? That's so encouraging. Thank you. Thanks a lot." For those of you that don't know, I pastored my first church as an unmarried man. God had it for me. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. It was lonely, but I learned a lot. I prayed my whole life that God send me the woman of his choosing. And I saw all my friends get married and have kids and all this, and I just sat there and watched them. But when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth my wife. Now, here's the neat thing about this. I knew her in college. Her brother-in-law, who's now my brother-in-law, tried to fix us up. And we won't hear in it. Oh, wouldn't it have been wonderful if y'all had gotten married right out of college? No. You know why? We weren't ready. We wouldn't have gotten along. There were some things that had to happen in our life to position us to have a successful marriage, and we weren't there yet. And maybe you've been asking God for something, and He in His wisdom knows you flat can't handle it yet. Am I telling the truth? God knows these things. I'm telling you, be encouraged. God hadn't told you no, but maybe the fullness of time isn't here yet. Maybe it's a matter of the message. Maybe it's a matter of the management. Maybe it's a matter of the right marriage of two circumstances hasn't come together yet. Huh? There's two things in your life that needs to come together, and they haven't yet. And maybe He knows your mindset isn't there. One of the things that grips my heart most dearly is this church. There's so much I want for you. And I ask God for it. I ask God that this church would see revival. Preacher, are we seeing it? Little specks, maybe. But are we seeing real, honest-to-goodness Bible revival? Not yet. Not yet. Those people that we're praying for getting saved. People getting right. Marriages getting healed. Kids coming home. Man, wouldn't that be wonderful? But maybe God knows that our mindset and thus our heart is not yet where it needs to be. When I worked for Beringer Ingelheim Chemicals, I've told you this story before, but it fits perfectly here. For all the years between my first church and this one, I begged God to let me pastor again. I didn't leave my last church under bad circumstances. I was lonely, and I felt like I had preached literally everything I knew. And 5 years, I was out. I was out. I had nothing else. And I said, I need to get out of here before I do something stupid, preach heresy or something like that. I'm getting out of here. So I left on good terms, and the Lord brought her back into my life, and we got married and started our family, and I was miserable. And I begged God over and over again, oh, God, please, please let me pastor again. God, as far as I know, I haven't disqualified myself, and please let me pastor again. Please let me back into a church. Please let me. Please, God, please, please, please. I'm asking for something I believe pleases you. Please, God, let me pastor again. Please, God, please, God, please, God, please. But it was in the break room at Normandy Drive in Petersburg, Virginia, at Beringer Ingelheim Chemicals, that I sat down on a graveyard shift and I was alone. And God broke my heart. And I said, Lord, if it's your will that I never pastor again, so be it. Just let me do something great for you wherever I am, even if it's right here. And for me, that was the fullness of the time. God got my mind and heart right where He wanted it. A short while later, I get a call from Ray Haskett, my pastor. Used to pastor at Rural Retreat. Says, there's a church not far from where I used to pastor looking for one. You want me to send them your information? I said, don't worry about it. I'll do it myself. I got a packet ready. Just hadn't reached the point where my mind and heart was where it needed to be. God needed me to say the words, Lord, I'll do whatever you want me to do. Just help me to be faithful. And maybe that's where you are. You've been asking God for something for a long time, but God wants your heart to get to the point where you're just broken and say, Lord, not my will, but thine be done. You see, I believe there's people in this room this morning, and your hearts are broken, and you've been asking God for something for a long time. You need to be encouraged. Because if God has not yet answered that prayer, he has a reason. And it is a reason that is founded in his love and in his omniscience and in his perfect understanding of all things. And maybe, just maybe, it's not that he is not pleased to answer that request. Maybe it's that he knows that you have not yet reached the fullness of the time. Because God's timing is always perfect. Let's stand with our heads bowed and our eyes closed, please.